I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I'm Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest, Dr. Francisco Contreras, serves as Director, President, and Chairman of the Oasis of Hope Hospital. A distinguished oncologist and surgeon, Dr. Contreras is renowned for integrative conventional and alternative cancer treatments with emotional healing and spiritual care to provide patients with the best possible treatment outcomes. After graduating from medical school at the Autonomous University of Mexico in Toluca, Dr. Contreras specialized in surgical oncology at the University of Vienna in Austria, where he graduated with honors. Dr. Contreras has authored and co-authored several books concerning integrative therapy, including 50 Critical Cancer Answers, The Hope of Living Cancer-Free, The Coming Cancer Cure, Beating Cancer, and Dismantling Cancer. More information is available at www.oasisofhope.com and twitter.com/Dr. Contreras. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Dr. Contreras, and I look forward to hearing about therapies that you offer for cancer patients at the Oasis of Hope. Now, first, how does the breakdown of the immune system open the door to cancer?
Well, it's been fairly well proven by many studies that as long as you have a fully functioning immune system, you cannot develop cancer. So cancer is a consequence of the fact that your immune system is not working up to par. So anything that we do to distract on the activities of our immune system, we will open the door for the possibility of cancer to grow and thrive. Mm-hmm. The reason for this is that we all have cancer cells circulating. Mm-hmm. And our immune system, is when it's able, it will destroy them and not allow them to get organized. Mm-hmm. So if, for instance, we eat junk, if we smoke, if we don't exercise, then the immune system will be distracted in taking care of those aggressions and will not be taking care of those circulating cells that are out there. They will organize and form cancer. So in a very simplistic form, I'm explaining how cancer develops in our body due to the fact that the immune system is would be distracted or is not working correctly.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And that's what I like, is things that make sense, right?
Yes.
Then, Dr. Contreras, what types of immunotherapies are you doing at the Oasis of Hope?
Well, taking this into account, even if you get rid of a tumor, and this is what's happening mostly with conventional therapy, if you do not address the immune system, the tumor is going to come back. And that is why the incidence of recurrence after chemo, radiation, or surgery is so high. And the promise of those cures have failed us because we do not address the immune system. So at the Oasis of Hope, we have many means of helping out our patients with the immune system, from, let's say, prayer, laughter, singing, the study of the Bible, meditation. All of those things are very powerful immune stimulating agents. Mm-hmm. But we also use nutrients to improve the quality and quantity of our immune system. And more than that, we also have technology to actually increase the amount and quality of immune system cells, let's say the white cells or the dendritic cells, which are one of the most important cells of the immune system. And so we have created a number of elements such as this in vaccines to improve the activity of the immune system when a patient is already in remission, or to kill tumors, because the immune system can be a very active part of the anti-tumor therapy that you develop for patients. So it's a wide range of immune strategies and immune therapies that we offer our patients at the Oasis of Hope Hospital. Mm-hmm.
I'm glad to hear of such a comprehensive, holistic approach, because I think that is so important. And you have done that for years, haven't you?
Yes. From the beginning, we knew that we needed to treat the whole patient, mm-hmm. that is body, mind, and spirit. And a long time ago, they would say, you're just brainwashing the patients. But the brain plays an important role in your healing process or mm-hmm. in your getting sick. So thereafter, we knew about diseases that were called psycho diseases or diseases where your psyche would influence mm-hmm. your health. And now we call it psychoneuroendocrinology. Mm-hmm. That's, the power of your thoughts into your nervous system that goes into your glands and stimulates cells that will activate or inactivate your immune system. So, yes, working for the immune system has always been a big, big part mm-hmm. of the Oasis of Hope strategy.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't your father very instrumental in bringing the concept body-mind to medicine?
Well, I think he was the one that coined the phrase holistic mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. back in the late 50s, early 60s. Mm-hmm. So he was way ahead of his time.
Right. But people that are way ahead of their time sometimes are penalized, right?
Extremely. he was ostracized and criticized. But now everybody's talking about the theories that he posed many, many years ago.
Right. That's great. Then can you tell us more about combining the dendrite cell vaccine and the cryoablation?
Yes. Well, as I mentioned before, one of the most important elements of the immune system is the dendritic cell. The dendritic cell is part of the white cells. And I think that all of us have heard that we have red cells, white cells, and platelets, for instance. Well, the white cells are the cells that are designed to attack anything that shouldn't be in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And for this to happen in an organized fashion, God created a system of presenting the bad guys to the good guys mm-hmm. in our system.
Mm-hmm.
And that is that's what the dendritic cells do. They are called presenter cells. So we have, like the Pac-Man, we have a white cell that's a killer cell. And that killer cell is not going to do anything until it's told, there's your foe. And that's the one that you need to attack, and that's the dendritic cell. So dendritic cells present the malignant cells to the white cells, the leukocytes or the natural killer cells. In all cases, a common denominator for all cancer patients is that they have a low dendritic count.
Mm.
So that's one of the reasons why we develop cancer when we don't have enough presenter mm-hmm. cells. And then so the foe can hide itself and start growing and doing bad things, and nobody will attack them. So we increase the number of dendritic cells. Now, the dendritic cells also keep the memory of everything that has ever happened to you. Let's say that you had measles, that you had whatever disease or infection you had, the dendritic cells have the information. They keep it there as a memory, so that when you have it again, they will react faster. So what we do here is that we harvest blood from our patients, we separate dendritic cells, and then we culture them, we like clone them. So let's say that from 100,000 we make 20 million.
Mm-hmm.
Now these 20 million new cells are immature, that is, they have no memory of anything. Mm-hmm. They're brand new. And then we only provide antigens of the tumor. And so these new colony of cells is mm-hmm. like a new entity of your defense mechanism. Let's say you now have an anti-terror task, mm-hmm. and this group of people will not do anything for people that are stealing banks. They will not do anything for people that are raping women. The only thing that they're dedicated is to go after terrorists.
Mm-hmm.
So in this sense, we create a new entity with dendritic cells that only have information about your tumor. Now, these antigens are obtained either from tumor circulating cells or from the tumor itself. We can harvest, we can remove a part of a tumor or a tumor from a patient and obtain the antigens there. But the highest amount of antigens produced is when you actually destroy a tumor with cold, very, very cold temperatures. That is what cryo stands for, an ablation for destruction. Mm-hmm. So we put a probe into a tumor of a patient and destroy it with very low temperatures. It's about -100 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm-hmm. It's very, very cold. And so this process dumps a tremendous amount of antigens from that tumor. So in that place where we are dumping those antigens, we place the dendritic cells of our patients. Mm-hmm. And that way they are activated with the antigens of the tumor, and then they go to all of the body and look up and say, well, now we found the tumor, and now you can tell the white cells, the Pac-Man, natural killer cells, go and kill these guys. At the same time, we are going to harvest T cells from the patients and clone them as well and increase the number of those guys so that, you know, a big army, a big anti-tumor army from the immune system is now dedicated to killing the tumors from the patient wherever they are in the body. Mm-hmm. And so this is an immune strategy that we have developed at the Oasis of Hope. In it, to date, it's the only place where we're doing it. All of this is in the medical literature. It's been done in animals. It's been studied. There's many, many publications. But we're the first ones to actually do it in patients.
Hmm. It sounds very complex. And
it is complex, but it's, you know, the beauty of it is we are only exploiting, let's say, in the good mm-hmm. sense of the word, mm-hmm. the word, what God had created already in our bodies.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so this way we just increase the capacity of our immune system to fight the patient's own tumor.
Mm-hmm. Do you actually take the cells out of the body and work with them and then put them back in?
We actually do
okay.
that.
Because I wasn't sure whether you were locating them within the body or taking them out.
No, we obtain blood from the patient, uh-huh. and all of mm-hmm. those cells are in the blood. Mm-hmm. And so we separate each one, mm-hmm. and then we, let's say the dendritic cells and the white cells, mm-hmm. several. Yeah, and so once we have them separate them, we culture them.
Mm-hmm.
To culture a cell is to put them in the place where they replicate. And mm-hmm. so you increase the amount. And then we stimulate them with the antigens that we also obtain from either the blood or the patient's tumor. Or whenever we can do the cryoablation, we actually activate the cells. Instead of in the lab, we activate them inside of the... We use the patient mm-hmm. as the lab,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
the patient's body as a lab.
Now, does this have to be repeated, or is it done once?
Yes, it depends on how aggressive a tumor is, how much tumor load is.
Mm-hmm.
So we can repeat this every 4 to 6 months. That's more mm-hmm. or less what this colony will work, only working against the tumor, until little by little they get contaminated by other dendritic cells. And then the colony starts acquiring many other antigens, and then they become not specific for the tumor, but they have, you know, be inside of their wealth mm-hmm. of knowledge and memory, the antigen of the tumor. So they become less effective in fighting the patient's cancer. So at that time, we do a booster of the therapy, 4 to 6 months, more or less.
Mm-hmm. And how long does the patient usually stay when they come?
They stay about 3 weeks for us to be able to do all of this. Then they come back usually after about 12 weeks
mm-hmm.
for us to do an evaluation and see mm-hmm. if we need to do any adjustments of the therapy. And thereafter, it just depends on the response. Some patients don't need to come again. They're doing so well that they don't need to come.
Mm-hmm.
Other patients will come, you know, sometimes even every month until we get control of the tumor activity.
Mm-hmm.
And thereafter, once there's control, maybe once a year, once every 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
It just depends on each patient.
Right, yeah. Then how do your results using immunotherapy compare with results using chemotherapy?
Well, if you look at the statistics from the American Cancer Society, the five-year survival rates is how we measure response on patients. So the five-year survival rate of breast cancer patients in stage four, for instance, is about 35-36%. There's 35 out of every 100 patients that started therapy when they were diagnosed and they were diagnosed at stage four, about 35 of 100 will be alive after 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
With our program, about 75% of the patients are alive after 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Big difference.
So it's a major, major difference.
And are there side effects to the
endo? There are minimal side effects to our therapy in comparison to chemotherapy. Mm-hmm. It's up. Even though it's natural, it is harsh. Vaccines may cause symptoms very, like every other vaccine, they're usually flu-like symptoms, and that's about it. So the side effects that our patients will have are minimal in comparison to chemo and radiation.
Oh, yeah. That's great. Yeah, I like that. You also, now I know at one point you had treated over 100,000 patients since the Oasis of Hope had been open. And can you tell us about some of the other treatments that you are still using or have used successfully in the past?
Yes, we've done about 75 prospective clinical trials here with many elements, especially in the natural realm.
Mm-hmm.
And the ones that have been the most effective over the years, number one has been amygdalin, or B17, also known by many as Laetrile.
Mm-hmm.
That was a commercial name in the 60s, and it just stuck. Number two of the many things that we've done that have made a big impact in improving our results is high-dose vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
Number three is what is called metabolic signaling transduction. It sounds very ominous, very very complicated, but it's really manipulating the metabolic routes of cancer cells to produce the proteins that they need to grow. And you can actually block those metabolic pathways with nutrients. So nutrients are the most powerful signaling transduction agents. And so what happens is that if we know for a fact that a tumor needs high levels of insulin to grow, well, you can impact the tumor negatively just by reducing the amount of sugar that you eat. And so this is the most simple one, okay? But there are other proteins that you can actually reduce the production significantly with certain foods or food extracts like curcumin, like grapeseed extract, like resveratrol, like zinc, and the list goes on and on. So using nutrients to interfere with metabolic pathways of the malignant cells is another big part of our therapy. I would say that a big, big part of our therapy is emotional and spiritual, let's say, resources to our patients. And so we spend a lot of time with our patients in providing them with spiritual fortitude, because when you have spiritual fortitude, the reaction to your emotions is different. And so one of the things that destroys the immune system the most are, let's say, most people call them negative emotions, anger, fear, resentment. And so if you resolve the root of those problems and you help the patient understand what the root of those are, then they can release those emotions and will convert them into functional emotions that will help the immune system. So I would say that spiritual and emotional support is one of the major things that make our therapy be so effective and our statistics so much better than any other places. So those four things will encompass just about everything that we do at the Oasis of Hope.
Great. Is there Anything else then that you'd like to say before we look at the services and your books and your website and things like that?
Well, what I would like to tell your audience is that I have spent most of my life in educating people mm-hmm. about the fact that cancer is not necessarily a death sentence.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the main reason for our name, the Oasis of Hope. No matter how advanced, no matter how grim it looks, the possibility for you to respond to a combination therapy like ours is very, very big. And so the hope that you can control, that you can get rid of, that you can live with cancer is there and is there for everybody to grab. And we see many, many miracles. God is still a God mm-hmm. of miracles mm-hmm. now. And so never give up.
Right. I hear from a lot of people as a result of the book, and a lot of them want to use Laetril, and so they ask. And I tell them that I think that you do still use it, but that sometimes organizations or hospitals are a little hesitant to say that they use it because of the past and the FDA getting at people, at least in the United States. And you are in both the United States and Mexico now, right? Isn't that
yes,
right?
But of course B17 is not allowed in the United States of America, but it's approved by the Mexican FDA in Mexico.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So here in Mexico, there's no problem mm-hmm. using it.
Mm-hmm.
And really, there's a lot of misinformation about B17,
mm-hmm.
but it's a natural anti-tumor agent with mild anti-tumor activity, but it's proven to be very, very effective.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why we've been using it now for over 50 years
mm-hmm.
with success.
Mm-hmm. Then, Dr. Contreras, would you tell us about your books and if there's other things you want to say about service and if you have products? And also your website, which is very comprehensive, I think.
Yes, well, I've written a number of books, and the reason why I started writing books is because, you know, people perish for lack of knowledge.
Right.
And so my aim is to provide people with information that is practical, that is simple, and that can change their life. There are many, many studies, for instance, that show that if you increase the intake of fruits and vegetables to 5 portions a day, your chances of developing cancer will drop by 50%.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Even if you make no changes in your diet, if you don't stop smoking and mm-hmm. going to McDonald's every day, you will reduce that risk by 50%.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine if you start exercising and stop doing all of the bad things that you do to yourselves and eat a correct diet. Well, that's the best way to prevent cancer. So that was the main reason that I started writing books. And also then to help cancer patients understand that there's a lot of things that they can do on their own to improve their chances of beating cancer.
Mm-hmm.
So my latest book, 50 Critical Cancer Answers, was born out of many, many questions that I would receive and receive. And the most common 50 questions that I received, we compiled it into a book, giving mm-hmm. the 50 answers with tips to the patients, with practical things that you can do on a daily basis. And that's why this latest book has been so successful.
Mm-hmm.
And you will find a lot of information about what we do at the Oasis of Hope Hospital on our webpage. And as you said, it is very comprehensive.
Mm-hmm.
So that on our webpage, you can find, you know, all the information that most people want to know. If you want to go a little bit deeper, let's say that you're a patient and you want to know more, well, we have that information for you. But let's say that you are a doctor and you want to understand more, well, you can go a bit deeper and find all of the white papers, all of the literature, all of the articles that our therapy is based on.
Mm-hmm.
And every element of our therapy has a lot of scientific support.
Mm-hmm.
So even a researcher will find in our website the critical information about why is it that, for instance, we do cryoablation? Why is it that we do pomegranate supplements on patients with prostate cancer?
Mm-hmm.
So the page is very, very comprehensive. It's oasisofhope.com. And if you want to get in touch with us, our number is 888-500-HOPE. H-O-P-E.
Hmm. Mm-hmm.
888-500-HOPE.
Great. Well, I appreciate this very much, Dr. Contreras, and I was really happy to hear about the immunotherapy because I haven't heard a lot about that before. And when you did the chapter for the book 2 years ago, I think that you were not into it at that point. You were more into the high-dose vitamin C and the Laetril and all
that. That's very true. What happened is that we did dendritic cells for a long time, but in 2011, two Nobel Prizes were awarded for people studying with dendritic cells. And from 2011 to now, the technology to apply the knowledge of these guys has been made available to us. And so the dendritic cell has improved significantly since then.
Well, it's great to keep up and to know what's going on and also to, to share that with my listeners because, you know, so many people are out there looking and they don't know where to go. And as you say, there's a lot of people that their problem is they don't have the information they need to make a rational decision. And so I'm glad to.
That is true. Yes.
Great. So I thank you again. It's been great.
You're very, very welcome, Mr. Helvey. God bless you.
Thank you, and you too.
Bye.
Bye. My second guest, Vincent Crewe, lives in Wakefield, West Yorkshire, in the north of England. He left school at 15 and has done many jobs in his working life, including shop assistant, long-distance driver, and driving instructor. He started several businesses, and some have succeeded, and some have not. He is very competitive and received his black belt in Taekwondo when he was 28, after a few years of hard training. He has been a mortgage broker for the past 22 years, and recently started another business with LED lighting. He has a keen interest in the paranormal, ufology, and spiritual matters. He has been married twice and has three children, two daughters and a son. He is a stage 4 cancer survivor who used natural alternative interventions. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Vincent, and I look forward to hearing about your stage 4 colon cancer. Now first, when were you diagnosed with colon cancer?
I was diagnosed in late 2006.
Mm-hmm. And what prognosis and treatment were you offered?
Well, the colon, which mine was colon cancer, which we later found had spread to the liver, the colon was very close to actually being totally blocked. And therefore, I had to have surgery pretty much straight away, within a couple of days, in actual fact. And after the colon surgery to remove the tumor, the surgeon and gastroenterologist had a meeting with me to say that while they were doing this fairly major surgery, it was about 6 hours operation, and there was no indication leading up to it that I had any real problems in that respect. I had some digestive problems, but nothing major. I was still training and all the rest of it. But they said whilst doing the operation, they noticed that there were two fatty nodules, as they put it, on the liver, and they would need to get those looked at. They'd taken biopsies and to see if it was cancer that had spread to the liver, basically. And that was confirmed. Mm-hmm. And they invited me to come back after a few weeks following the colon operation to have the liver operated on as well. And I deferred coming back for probably about 2 months. I was really struggling with whether I should try and do it alternatively with diet and various things, or whether I should come back and have those tumors removed. They did say to me that it would be quite an easy operation. I don't think any operation is easy on your liver because you bleed quite a lot, apparently, because it was on the edge of the liver. the left lobe, as they put it. And so I took myself off to Brazil and went to see John of God, thinking that maybe I could avoid the second operation and see what they could do. But the sort of response that I got in Brazil wasn't clear-cut, so in the end I did decide that I would have the second operation, which was about 2 months after the first one. And following that, they wanted to give me two lots of chemotherapy. I asked them, you know, what the survival rate was and how effective the chemo might be. They were very vague about all of that. So I basically declined their offer and told them I'd be doing various alternatives, and I did actually name a few of them, and the oncologist was struggling to not break out laughing, I think,
right,
when I mentioned coffee enemas and infrared saunas and all the rest of it. And he basically, you know, said, well, okay, good luck, probably go away and die somewhere, I think.
Right.
And so that's it. I walked away, and I never went back, basically.
Right.
And I've not really been back since.
And Vincent, what do you think was the cause of your cancer?
Oh, without doubt, stress. Absolutely without doubt, stress. I mean, I've always been involved in, you know, various businesses, which is stressful in itself, self-employed, etc. And I've also been married and divorced twice, so that all adds to the stress. And then I had quite a tragic bereavement, just mainly a couple of months leading up to the diagnosis. So, but I have been investigated over the years, over a few years really, for irritable bowel. I've had the barium enemas, I've had the blood test, and there was nothing, absolutely nothing showing on any of those tests whatsoever. And even when I went for the tests prior to the diagnosis, the gastroenterologist basically said, I don't expect to find anything. They were actually at this point putting a camera up and a camera down. But indeed they did. They found the tumor.
And then you ended up using a very comprehensive treatment program. Can you tell us about the program you used?
Well, you know, you don't get given an instruction book with this if you're going to do this alternatively. So you have to use your own intuition, basically. And that's what I would recommend to anyone, that they actually use their own intuition about what might be right for them. And anybody that I speak to about this, I always say the same thing, that what I did is not necessarily going to work for you, because we're all different. We've all arrived here for different reasons. But it will give you a bit of a track, a bit of a guideline to run on. But what I did was I just started reading quite a few different books about quite a few different therapies. The very first thing that I did was I bought a book by Dr. Sherry Rogers, an American doctor who specializes in environmental toxins. And it was called Detox or Die. And it gave a very good explanation about why we get sick, not just cancer, but various types of illnesses, with the environmental toxins that are all around us. It's part of our life. And the food, which is sprayed with the pesticides and the herbicides and all the plastics, the computers, the amalgam fillings that dentists still insist on putting in our teeth, all these things lead to an enormous amount of toxicity in your body. So that was the very first book that I bought, and I used that as my Bible. And from that, there were various chapters on infrared saunas, ozone therapy, enzyme therapy. There was lots of information in there. And I bought more books on all the various therapies that were named in there to learn more about those therapies. And there were some that didn't resonate with me, so I didn't do it. Mistletoe didn't resonate with me, didn't do it. So I was using my own sort of inner intuition as to what I felt that I needed to do and what wasn't right for me.
Good. And how did you measure your progress toward recovery while you were doing the alternative treatments?
Well, the first thing I embarked upon was cleaning the body, to be honest. So I started doing the juicing. Mm-hmm. I started using the fluorescence, which is another mm-hmm. form of Essiac tea. It's the mm-hmm. eight herb formula, which I believe is the original formula.
Right.
And the coffee enemas. And they were great in getting, you know, the body clean. I also got back into some sort of exercise as soon as I could, pretty much straight away. And it was simple. I mean, prior to the operations, I'd been going to the gym three times a week, out on my bike, doing plenty of exercise. But now I was quite weak. I'd lost weight. I was weak. I didn't have a great appetite. There'd be little things like walking up and down the stairs. You know, I'd have mm-hmm. some small dumbbells. But I would do exercise because I felt that that would be good for me, right. both physically mm-hmm. and mentally. And I religiously juiced just once every morning. I didn't do the whole Gerson thing, but I looked into the Gerson thing.
Mm-hmm.
But I just did carrot juicing and apple. I made a pint of that each morning. I took that with enzymes and other supplements, zinc, vitamin C. I actually don't know what was the most effective of everything that I did, because mm-hmm. I did a lot. My philosophy was, I want to make my internal environment as inhospitable as possible for cancer. So mm-hmm. I wouldn't want to stay there, basically.
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't sort of having a battle with cancer, because I think that's the wrong way to approach it. I don't think you should think about cancer as being some deadly enemy that's crept into your body. I think you've got to realize that you've actually done it yourself without realizing it,
mm-hmm.
and you need to love your body better rather than go to war with it.
Right.
So that was my philosophy. Get myself clean in terms of the internal environment, detoxify as much as possible, and then get good nutrition back into the body.
Mm-hmm.
And I also did ozone therapy. I bought myself an ozone generator and self-administered that. And I bought myself an infrared sauna and went in that. So I did a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I can't tell you, out of everything that I did, what was the most effective.
Now, I think you use vitamin B17, right? That's what
I
used.
Yeah, that was one of the first supplements that I came across. Someone gave me a CD, and I can't remember what they called it, but it was about B17. I think something like World Without Cancer,
right.
I think that's what they called it. And it was about the B17.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started using that. The taste of the apricot kernels is horrendous.
Right, I know.
So I used to grind them up mm-hmm. and put them into the carrot juice to disguise the taste. And that worked quite well.
Mm-hmm.
And I took zinc supplements and enzyme, pancreatic enzyme
right,
is something
right.
else that I took as well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, I use the vitamin B17 and the apricot, the kernels, but I ate 25 a day, but I just ate them and then I drank water after.
Well, you're a brave man.
For 2 years.
I grew into a few, and I think it didn't help that I've got quite a sweet tooth. So some people tolerate them quite well because mm-hmm. maybe they don't have a sweet tooth, but, you know, I couldn't stand the taste of them just chewing them. So, but I do know people that can. So, mm-hmm. you know, it's everyone. Again, everyone is different.
Now, how did you know that you were recovering? Did you do the Navarro test? Or did you go back to the doctor who did tests?
I didn't do anything. I didn't do any tests. I've never been back to the hospital. I've never had any tests. I've never done any tests. I just knew in myself...
Mm-hmm.
Third, I was getting fitter, I was getting stronger again, I could exercise for longer. I just knew instinctively that, don't get me wrong, it is an up and down process, because
mm-hmm.
as you start to move the cancer cells out of your body, because obviously everyone knows that the tumor is not the cancer,
right.
you know, the tumor is a symptom of the cancer. The cancer is still in your body, so whatever brought the tumor on is still in your body, and you need to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I just knew because I felt better, but I've never been back, and it's 9 years now nearly,
mm-hmm.
For any tests on that, but I'm back at the gym three times a week. I've been for a few years, to be honest, and I just know in myself that I'm okay.
Mm-hmm.
And the stress, of making the appointment and waiting for the appointment, and then going to the doctors and sat in the waiting room, waiting to see, you know, what tests they're going to do, and then the stress of having the test, waiting for the results of the test. I didn't want any of that. I didn't want anything to deflect what I was doing. And, of course, the bottom line is, if they say, yes, the cancer's come back again, what are they going to offer me? They're going to offer chemotherapy, radiation, or surgery. Well, I'm not going to have it anyway. So there was no point. I decided to focus entirely upon the regime that I was embarked upon and just keep my head down and keep going.
And how long, then, did it take before you started feeling better?
1 year.
1 year.
I know that because I went back to the gym probably about 6 weeks, 8 weeks after the second operation, and you know, I couldn't even do the warm up. I couldn't even but I kept going. I kept going back to the gym, and after a year, I was back to fitness again. So that's when I knew I was okay.
Great, good. And have you then maintained the lifestyle changes that you made?
The only real change in lifestyle for me is the management of the stress. I think that most people, I mean, I don't know about you, Carl, so I don't know your history of how you feel you got to a point where you got cancer. But most people that I talk to, when I say to them, how did you get here, do you think? What events in your life might have brought you? Every one of them has a story about bereavement, about bad relationships, about maybe financial problems, but it all seems to boil down to stress has brought them there. Not necessarily, you know, they were drinking too much or smoking too much or eating the wrong food, but everyone that could pin down events in their life, you know, they would all say, well, I've been under a lot of stress over the last 2 or 3 years. And it could be a bereavement. They've never managed to get over. There's all sorts of reasons that people get to, you know, this place called cancer. But on the other hand, people that have been through it, like yourself and like me, look back upon it as being a blessing because without that event in your life, you wouldn't actually realize what's going off in the world. You don't. You really, you wake up, basically. That's the only way I can put it. It wakes you up. And people say, well, I wouldn't have missed that experience because it's changed me completely.
Right. Now, you said you changed your diet. Did you stay on the diet that you changed to?
No, not really. To be honest, no, not really. I mean, I didn't have a really bad diet before. I do eat more vegetables. I do still do the juicing, and I still do the coffee enemas. Religiously, I will do the coffee enemas 5 times a week. I will do the juicing pretty much every morning because I know that that will help keep the body alkaline. And I've given up one or two things just because, yeah, I felt I didn't need it anymore, like bread. I don't eat bread anymore.
And, Vincent, what was the most important thing you learned from the cancer journey?
That's a good question. I think the most important thing is that you need to keep on top of the stress in your life, and you need to let go of any anger, any negative thoughts that you tend to hold in and suppress. I mean, that really, I think, is the key to most disease. It seems to be that, you know, it's the stress that's going to get you. And I think that the other important thing as well is that you've got to follow your intuition, you know, when you're looking for a means of treating any illness. The doctors can only dish out chemicals, it seems. They don't have any idea about nutrition. They don't have any idea about emotional problems. They don't ask you any of those questions. They just see the symptom and they have a drug for it. Well, that's not going to get you well. I think that you need to try and, well, you do need to take responsibility for your own health. I think that is number one.
Right.
So I generally, if I break my leg, I'll go back to the doctor's or hospital, but I won't go back for anything much other than that, to be quite honest. They could have given you a diagnosis, that usually, anyway. They're quite good at that. But generally, you know, if I've got a health problem, then I'll do some research and I'll look at an alternative way of dealing with it. I won't go to the doctors. I think it's bad for your health.
You said that people should be use their intuition about making decisions. That's easier said than done, because a lot of people do not have any intuitive abilities. How would you suggest that people go about developing their intuition so that they can use that ability in making their decisions?
Well, I think there are two things there. Meditation, without doubt. And I don't mean that you necessarily have to sit cross-legged with your palms facing upwards and make the om sound. And I don't do that, and I'm not very flexible, so I can't sit cross-legged anyway. So I have a nice quiet spot in the house. I'll put some headphones on. I will listen to a guided meditation CD of some sort. And sometimes I will actually sleep all night in our meditation room. So I think meditation is a key to it, actually trying to stop the chatter in your head. And I think the best way of doing that is guided meditation. It certainly was for me anyway, because if I try and do it without guided meditation or without relaxing music, the chatter is fairly incessant. And I think that the meditation is probably the key to it, to be quite honest.
Great, good. I meditate, I have for many, many years, and I agree with that.
It's not easy. It's definitely not easy. I mean, I even went on a whole week's course to learn how to meditate, and when I got back, I still couldn't do it. So the guided meditation is good for me.
Now, you were telling me earlier about someone who you organized a prayer group for that had cancer. Do you want to tell us about that?
Yeah, I won't make the story too long, but a good friend of mine, his wife was diagnosed with lymphoma. She was 33 years old, and they had three children, all under the age of five. And I'd read in various articles about group prayer or mass prayer performing miracles on people, basically. And so I thought, well, let's give this a try. There's nothing to lose. Now, this person was actually a medium in the UK. He gave demonstrations at various churches in our local vicinity. It's quite well known. And he still supports churches. He does fundraising events for them. So I contacted probably six local churches who knew him well and who I felt would help out in this situation. I sent them all a photograph of his wife for them to put on the notice board so that people would have a face or an image to concentrate on. And I asked them if they're willing to, just for 2 minutes on three consecutive Sundays, just before they start the service, if they would be willing to sit quiet for 2 minutes and just send out healing thoughts to this person whose face, you know, they would know because it's on the notice board. And so we started this. I asked my friend and his wife to be in a quiet place on these Sundays and just sit and receive, basically, sit and receive the healing coming their way. After the first session, I got a nice letter from the lady to say that, you know, they both sat quiet. They felt a wave of what she could only describe as love coming over. And that she felt extremely well, even though she should be out of her mind with worry, she actually felt extremely well. On the second session, they said they'd been back to the oncologist to look at what treatment would be needed. And the oncologist, the professor of oncology at this particular hospital, had sort of thrown up his hands or her hands, I can't remember if it was male or a female now, and said, I don't know how to explain this, but we don't see any signs of the cancer. But we will do more tests. And after the third session, I got another note to say that the hospital have no explanation, but the cancer appears to have gone, appears to have disappeared. And so he said in his little letter to me, his little note, he was on a train at the time, traveling somewhere, that they would not get too excited just in case it was one of those things and you know, the tests were wrong or whatever else. Mm-hmm. And he would come back to me in a few months just to confirm that everything was okay. That was 15 years ago.
Hmm.
And she's been cancer-free since.
Great.
Then. So the power of prayer, I mean, prayer is obviously thought, and thought is a little parcel of energy that you send out there. And if enough people are doing it all at one time, well, I'm sure it's going to have some good effect. And that certainly worked.
Right. I agree. I think it's very powerful and an important aspect of any cancer treatment. So I appreciate this very much, Vincent. It's been very interesting and will be helpful to those that are faced with a cancer diagnosis and want to consider some other ways of dealing with it other than chemotherapy and radiation. So I appreciate this very much.
Yeah, if I can just say one thing before you finish there, that I think the most important thing for people to realize is that when they go to the doctors and the doctors are giving them this diagnosis, their diagnosis is based on their experience in using what I think is an abysmal, failed system for treating cancer.
Right.
So don't be despondent about that, because it's just one person's opinion. And they know nothing about nutrition. They know nothing about these alternative treatments. It's just an opinion. Take it as an opinion and then go and do your own research.
Thank you. That's very important information for people to have. So
nice to talk to you, Carl.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me today on the Holistic Health Show. And I hope some of the information will be useful to you. I invite you to my websites, holistichealthshow.com. where you will find all shows for the past 7 years under the blog. You will also find much of the research on natural ways to deal with cancer and other health conditions, and can sign up for my free monthly newsletter. On my website, beatlungcancer.net, you will find many of the 135 interviews from radio and television over the past 2 years about my book on treating lung cancer naturally and holistically when I was diagnosed 41 years ago next month and given 6 months to live by traditional medicine who offered chemo and surgery. This book was published in November 2012 and was a bestseller on Amazon. You will find endorsements of the book, a place to buy the book, and an earlier one from 2007 titled Healthy Holistic Aging, A Blueprint for Success. On my third website, you will find information on the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation, begun last year and currently in the phase of completing the website. This site is at www.holisticcancerfoundation.com. Information on how the foundation differs from others, board members, research on holistic natural ways to deal with cancer, including mental and spiritual interventions, interviews with cancer physicians and survivors, and more. If you would like to donate to the work I am supporting, there is a tab to donate, and I can offer you a tax exemption receipt if living in the United States. I also invite you to join me on Facebook at my Facebook page, www.facebook.com/Carl Helvey, on my Holistic Health Show page at www.facebook.com/pages/Holistic Health Show, and the Carl O'Helvey Holistic Cancer Foundation page at www.facebook.com/beatlungcancernaturalalternative. On LinkedIn, I invite you to join me under my name, Dr. Carl O'Helvey. On Twitter, I invite you to join me at www.twitter.com/HolistHealthShow, HolistHealthShow. I wish you a great week, and I look forward to having you here in 2 weeks. I'm Dr. Carlo Helvey, your host.